Well, welcome back to another episode of the Vertical Podcast. Glad you could join me. Special edition broadcasting from the NBA Summer League here in Las Vegas. And I'm joined here on set by my two colleagues, Michael Lee and Shams Charania, both of the Vertical. And we cover a wide range of topics from James Harden's contract extension to the Knicks' decision not to hire David Griffin to how Gordon Hayward fits in with the new look Boston Celtics. So stick around. A lot to get to. Going to be a lot of fun. Joining me on the pod this week from the Thomas & Mack Center here in Las Vegas, my colleague over at The Vertical, Michael Lee. What's up, Mike? Good to see you, man.
You know, it's good to be seen. You know, it's been a while. You know, I'm still adjusting to my new life, but back in the basketball, so it's fun.
Back in the basketball world, your new life. It's been, what, a month and a half?
So 2 months.
2 months? Wow, two months since Michael Lee became a dad.
Yeah, no sleep, a lot of diapers. You know, it's fun, though.
But you're enjoying it, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is an incredible experience. I can't really explain how awesome it is. I mean, it's just exhilarating, exhausting, you know, just all those emotions. And just to see, like, every movement and every squirm and every squeal, just it all just makes you smile. Yeah, I know. I'm a softie when it comes to my
I'd say I know how that feels, but I have no idea. Not this point.
So I'm not asking you to.
I have no clue.
I didn't know what it was like until eight weeks ago.
I have no clue at this point. All right, let's just jump right into it.
Yeah.
Two of the big stories that I want to get into right at the top. The first is James Harden and the new contract that he got from the Houston Rockets, effectively taking him through the 22-23 season. We can call it basically a six-year contract at $228 million. So basically over the next 6 years, the Rockets are going to pay James Harden close to $250 million. In salary. Do you like this deal for Houston?
Yeah, because that's what the cost of a max player is nowadays. That's what it costs. I mean, it's amazing, though, that only five players in NBA history have earned that much money, have earned over $200 million, and he's going to be able to make it in 6 years. And he's still going to probably have another contract when that's over with. I just think that right now it's hard to get too wrapped up in money in the dollar signs because – one, I'm not writing the check, and two, that's the cost of doing business nowadays. It doesn't make a lot of sense. The money right now is crazy, and if you're a superstar player, then you've earned a right to make whatever they're willing to pay you. And everyone's probably overreacting a bit on how much James is getting, but hey, the owner's making a lot of money. Mm-hmm. I don't know anybody in any business that's going to pay an employee more than what they're going to make. So if he's paying him that much, he expects to make that much off of him. I think the weird thing about where we are right now in the league is that the cost of a superstar player has gone up exponentially, but the value of one superstar has diminished tremendously because you can see just from what he had to endure this postseason as a one-man show, it looked like they were building the right team around a superstar. You know, Oklahoma City was doing the same with Russ, but Oklahoma City realized, okay, we can't just rely on Russ. We'll just be a six-seed middling team that just gets by. They went and got Paul George. You know, so it's going to cost a lot to maintain your main star. But, you know, he can't do it by himself. James tried, you know, and you could see he started to fade the last month of the regular season, started to fade in the playoffs. And then game six, that inexplicable performance where he just vanished. I just think he was wiped out. You know, I know it's hard to say that because, you know, a guy, you know, but you don't. We're not asking to carry a team for 82 games, then the playoffs, and then lose all your big men. And you got to not only be the point guard, you got to be the power forward on defense, guarding LaMarcus Aldridge, and make plays. I just think he was wiped out, and so now, you know, he's gonna get some help now with Chris Paul. But I just find it intriguing though that now that it just costs so much to pay a superstar player. But you need more stars, and then which owners are actually going to be the ones willing to pay what it's going to cost to win with a star because you're going to need more stars. And, you know, Daryl Morey says get as many, you know, Olympians as you can on mm-hmm. your squad. Maybe they're going to get Carmelo to add to the mix. But
to me, he's talking about LeBron. To me, he's already angling for LeBron.
Why not? I
would too.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you? I mean – you are presenting your best possible option to LeBron James. And we don't know what he's going to do in a year. But I tell you one thing, Mike.
I bet LeBron has a pretty good idea of what he's going to do in a year. I don't think LeBron's sitting back in Northeast Ohio or L.A. or wherever he is. I don't think he's sitting back wondering, you know, I mean, I'll make that decision when it comes to it. Because, Mike, we've seen what's happened in the past. The 2010 decision, the fledgling stages of it was like 2008, and maybe even before
even
then.
Probably, yeah, even six. The minute they teamed up
together. The minute those guys start to team up together. So I don't believe for a second that LeBron is not already hatching a plan, nor do I believe that there aren't guys already talking to him.
Like, absolutely.
This is what today's league is like. I mean, we saw what Draymond Green did all throughout the last year of Kevin Durant in Oklahoma City, and those guys talking to KD. You're telling me that these guys with that the Olympic heritage, that they're not talking to LeBron? You think that James Harden and Chris Paul aren't angling to get this guy into that mix? Because if LeBron is looking for a place to go, and again, we're just speculating here, but if LeBron's looking for a place to go, and if he's determined to leave, hard-pressed to find too many realistic situations that look better than Houston right now.
You're right. And, I mean, LeBron is always 10 steps ahead of everybody else. Wherever you think he's thinking, he's well beyond that. The same way he sees the floor, he sees his future off the court the same way. He's got incredible court vision and off-the-court vision. You know, and that's one thing you can't question about LeBron. You know that he already has a strategy, a plan about what the next phase of his career is. You know that winning a championship in Cleveland, it left him unburdened. At that point, he could do no wrong. He will be regarded as the GOAT to a lot of fans, no matter what happens, if he wins another championship or not. And now it's just all about, where am I going to have fun?
You don't think they'd still burn him, the Cleveland fans?
He gave them what they wanted.
Yeah, but
they wanted a championship. He delivered. He said, I'm coming home. I'm going to instill pride in this community. I'm going to uplift these spirits. And I think now with the lunacy of Dan Gilbert and the stuff that he's done, you know, in terms of not re-upping with David Griffin, you know, low-balling Chauncey Billups, he's got an obvious out. It's like, well, the owner didn't try hard enough. He didn't do enough to keep him around. And I think that now LeBron's sitting back, he's got an easy escape. If he leaves and says, well, the owner didn't seem to have the same commitment to winning as I did, who's going to be upset with him at that point? When he left in 2010, he was still a young player on his rise, in his prime. If he leaves next year, he'll be leaving his prime as well. So he will have given Cleveland, what, 11 years, great 11 great years, and a championship. They shouldn't be bitter over anything if he leaves again.
I agree with you on the front office. And in this situation, optics matter.
Yeah.
Cleveland can't do much. You could bring in, you know, the greatest GM, a combination of the greatest GM in history, of like the best of Red Auerbach and Jerry West and Pat Riley, and combine them together, and there's not much Cleveland can do. But optics matter here. If you're not willing to pony up the cash, and why money is even an object to Dan Gilbert at this point is beyond me, but if you're not willing to pony up the cash or the resources or whatever to bring in a top-flight guy, look, Chauncey Billups needed help, but Chauncey Billups was coming in as the team president. He would have brought in somebody, whether it's a Justin Zanuck type or some kind of GM with experience. And if you have that in place, you can at least send a message to LeBron saying, look, we may not have a lot of flexibility here. Some of that's your fault. You told me to sign these guys. We may not have a lot of flexibility, but we are bringing in people that are very good at their jobs, and we are not leaving this position vacant for the foreseeable future. I really believe that if LeBron goes in a year, we're going to be looking back a year plus from now as saying this summer began, or maybe not began it, but played a role in what happened there.
Yeah, you know, and as we're just talking, I'm just thinking on top of my head, what if Dan thinks in his mind that LeBron's going to leave anyway? Why invest a lot of money into a general manager if the direction that we've gone, the course that we've taken with LeBron, is no longer going to be that course?
Wouldn't that be even more of a reason, though, to bring in a top GM?
Yeah, you would think.
If it's going to get messier, wouldn't you want to bring in a top GM in that job?
Yeah, I mean, but he's you know, Dan's proven to have a short love affair with general managers, and once he's done with you, that's a wrap. So he's not going to pay to do it. I just feel like if you're LeBron, you know, I think now it's about having fun. You know, I think there was a level of you know, when they lost to the Warriors, there was not that anger, you know, that, I mean, I'm sure I can't measure how he's feeling, but I think he just accepted the fact that this team was a lot better, and that we're going to need somebody to really rescue us for a chance to do that again. and I don't think he felt like he had enough with what he has. So I feel like he has, he said it repeatedly, I have nothing more to prove. I have nothing more to prove. He really has nothing more to prove. So all he has to do, to me, I think, is continue to elevate his brand, to continue to try to enjoy playing basketball. Because for whatever it was, that time in Miami playing with D-Wade, you know, playing with Chris, it wasn't just about basketball because they were winning, but he was enjoying it too. I think in Cleveland, he's winning, but you could tell there were stages where it just wasn't fun. Like, it was work, you know, trying to get Kyrie to understand, you know, the intensity he's got to play with, and Kevin Love to know how to be in shape for, like, till June, you know, to know that, how to get your body ready for that. And he almost came off like Grandpa LeBron in a lot of ways. So they got that title, but it was a lot of work and a lot of strain on him mentally. I think that, you know, what else does he have to prove? Why not have a little fun while I'm playing? Why not go out with my buddies? I don't know if that's really his plan, but if it is, I could totally get it, because I know he's driven to win. I know he's passionate about winning. But I also know that there was something special about that moment he had in Miami playing with those guys and going through it with them, because the struggle, I think, it's a lot easier when you're with people you really care about. And I don't know if that's the situation right now in Cleveland.
Going back to Harden for a second, I think it made sense for Houston for two reasons. Number one, it sends a message to the rest of to free agents that at the very least you're going to have one other superstar to play next to for the next 6 years. James Harden's under contract. He's locked in. He's going to be our guy through the 2023 season. The other part of it is it prevents James Harden from having that wandering eye too. Like, you know, we've seen in the last couple of years what happened with Kevin Durant going from Oklahoma City to Golden State. We just saw Gordon Hayward going from Utah to Boston. This stops, you know, if they've gotten to the last year of his contract and they were still you know, a 500 type of team, or if the Chris Paul thing didn't work out, you know, you wouldn't blame a guy like James Harden going, you know what, maybe, you know, I want to win a championship. Maybe I want to go play in Miami with these guys. Or maybe I want to go team up in the Eastern Conference. I want to get the hell out of the Western Conference, which is a complete madhouse right now. Maybe I want to go there. This just takes that off the table. I agree wholeheartedly. You know, I know it's a lot of money, and will James Harden be worth it on the back end of that deal? Who knows? $40-plus million per year. Who knows what the NBA landscape is going to look like at that point. However, it just makes sense to lock him up now to keep that one guy under your umbrella for the foreseeable future.
Absolutely. I mean, that's why I didn't have as much of a problem as a lot of people maybe on social media, because again, I say it's not my money. So
people think too, like, they forget it's just going in the owner's pockets. Like, you don't see, like, I wish we could announce at the end of the year that you know, Dan Gilbert got a 1 year $322 million contract. Like, that's what he, because that's how much money he made off that team this year. People don't see that. They don't know how much profit these owners get. But make no mistake, they get 50% of the basketball revenue. So as much money as these players are getting, these owners are getting it, and then some. They divide it in a much smaller pie than what the players are dividing it into.
And the franchises are worth so much more. If they ever decide to sell, then they've made that much
Dan
more money.
Gilbert bought the Cavs for $375 million. You could sell it, if the Forbes valuation is accurate, for $1.2 billion. I mean,
yeah, so not only has he made that money, he made the casino money
off of the
being there in Cleveland as well. So, I mean, no, but it's weird, though. Fans always seem to side with ownership for some reason, more so than players. And whenever players make those power moves, it usually seems to inspire a lot more of anger than it does than owners, you know, profiting. Or even owners profiting off of arenas being built for them off taxpayer dollars and things like that. That's why I was really intrigued by what, you know, Durant did in terms of giving money back. Now, I know it wasn't like a Dirk-type discount, but also he is still 29 and in the prime of his career and just come off a finals MVP. To give
Dirk's getting like a $50 million bid on Shark Tank when it's over. Like, that's the way around the salary cap. It's like Dirk's
there's
like,
gotta be something.
I got this idea. It's like this new German ice cream, $50 million right there. Cuban going around him.
You figure, because I saw an estimate, someone said he may have left $190 million on the table.
Yeah, because the second time in 3 years in his third contract that he's been paid peanuts, relatively speaking, to what he's worth. Even now, Mike, if you had Dirk as just a real free agent, somebody would pay him $15-plus million on a 1 or 2 year deal.
Of course, because, I mean, just for the, you know, the novelty of having him on your team would be enough for that. Even if he's not going to be Dirk that you're used to seeing, he's still a really good player. And he's a great player. He's like, he could become number 5 in scoring.
Yep.
Like next year. So you couldn't market that and sell that? So, yeah, no, I'm intrigued by the fact that he's had that much loyalty to that franchise. And I'm always amazed by, like, the term loyalty when it comes to, you know, basketball sports in general. It seems to always work one way, and fans won't allow it, you know, to work the other way where players decide to go where they want to go. Or, like, we think free agency means free, but it doesn't. It means stay with me.
Right.
I just think that what Dirk has been able to give to that franchise in so many ways. And I asked him about it last year. It's like, why are you still loyal to this place? And he still remembers those boos. He still remembers that first year and when everyone questioned him and what he was going to be and how they stayed committed to him. And then they gave him his first big contract right after he initially proved himself. And that merely locked him into that franchise, you know, forever. And he went through the ups and downs and got a championship. And now he's just playing just to have fun. But Tim Duncan did the same thing.
Yep.
I guess it's a different type, different generation. So I don't know.
Yeah, I wonder what if he would have felt the same if they didn't have that championship in 2011, if he would have gone the Karl Malone, Gary Payton route and gone ring chasing towards the end there.
He probably would have.
Yeah.
I think that championship.
That was a game changer.
In the way they won it, you
yeah.
know, with him beating the Heat, you
yeah.
know, beating that franchise that took his first championship, you know, chance in 2006, beating them when they had LeBron and D-Wade, beating them when those two guys mocked him and for being sick and beating them when, you know, he was that one singular superstar. We haven't had a championship run like that where you have that one superstar and just a bunch of role players that can win. I mean, you've tried to see it duplicated since, but no one's been able to do it, and he did it. You know, you can't look at that team and say he had another all-star with mm-hmm. him. Jason Kidd was there. He's a Hall of Famer, but that wasn't Jason Kidd, you know, from 5 years prior. And that's the thing about, like, now we were talking earlier about just superstars. Could you see that happening again where one guy, you just build around him and you try to win championships? It can't happen anymore.
No.
He did it. He beat a super team by himself. You know, he had help, obviously, but he didn't have another big-name guy carrying him. And that I think that, again, made it easier for him to ride it out for his career because we appreciate him a lot more. Because I remember I was hard on him when he couldn't get a ring right away, when he blew it, when they won the MVP and they lost the first round to Golden State, when they blew that series against the Heat in the NBA Finals. It was easy to just pick on Dirk because – and Dwayne Wade called him out, said he wasn't a good enough leader to win a championship. So – but he did it. And now that superstar players cost so much money, you would think that there'd be somebody who would be innovative enough to try to find, to successfully duplicate that. But that's what makes Dirk so special. That's what makes his run so amazing, is that he did something that we might not ever see again because now you can't do it alone.
You know, it's funny, Mike. The NBA took something of a victory lap after the last collective bargaining agreement when they felt that they had done more to make sure that star players wouldn't leave their franchises, that they had made it so financially prohibitive for a star player to leave a franchise that we wouldn't see as much movement. This was, in theory, designed to help small markets, you know, to help the Oklahoma Cities and the Utahs and these smaller markets out there. It hasn't done that. In fact, what's changed is that these marquee players are deciding that the NBA's riches, they don't need them quite as much. And there's not a wide group of this, but there's a lot of players in this league, you know, a number of players in this league that can, like Kevin Durant, that can afford to say, you know what, I'm going to skim $10 million off the top of my day because, you know, my shoe contract is this and my other endorsement contract is that. I mean, they make so much money off the court. The NBA, in some ways, is victimized by its own success. It has become such a fast-growing in a global game that these guys are the star players are benefiting from it. They can take pay cuts and build whatever team they want. And that's something that the NBA... They just there's nothing they can do about it. People ask me all the time, like, how do we get parity? How do we get parity? I'm like, as long as Kevin Durant is leaving $10 million on the table, we ain't going to have parity.
No,
we're not
going
to have parity in the NBA.
Well, on the flip side of that with the CBA, the other aspect of the new agreement that I think is actually having the reverse effect is that now you have teams that are frightened by the cost of paying, like, a guy $200 million. Like, Sacramento could not conceive of giving DeMarcus Cousins that kind of money and investing in him and letting that be what we are. Like, they knew what the ceiling was with DeMarcus Cousins. It wasn't very high. So do you double down and give him that much money? No. Chicago reached the same, you know, decision with Jimmy Butler. He's a great player, but what's our ceiling with him? We missed the playoffs with him as our best player. Then we made the playoffs and lost in the first round with him as our best player. So what do? We go ahead and move him on. We trade him. So in some ways, you know, all that was done to try to keep players with their original franchise, in some ways, if you don't have that truly elite player that you really have to have, like an MVP caliber player, then you're in a bad position because you might wind up overpaying for a guy who's only going to be good enough to get you into the playoffs, won't be good enough to win you one or two, three series, definitely won't lead you to a championship. But then you're stuck yourself to that investment. Like, that's the guy you're going to be tied down to. I mean, Indiana probably would have paid Paul George whatever he wanted to stay there, but he had decided for himself, I don't want to be in Indiana anymore. I want to go where I want to play. Then I want to play with the Lakers. Okay, I'm out, you know. And then they traded him to Oklahoma City. But I'm intrigued more in how the CBA, which was meant to help home teams have that advantage, put them at a disadvantage now because they're really forced to make tough decisions about paying guys incredible, insane amounts of money. Because the money is just staggering now. It doesn't register like it did in the past. Like, you could look at a guy and be like, well, if he makes $20 million a year, then he's a truly elite player. If a guy makes $20 million a year, he might be coming off the bench now. And that's really hard to fathom, you know. Mm-hmm. Harden's deal last year, he's going to make $47 million the last year of his deal. I'm just thinking, like, remember an expiring deal was like it's something you could just trade and you move on. $47 million would be his expiring deal. Like, that's a huge commitment. And only how many actual franchise guys would you say are in the league?
Probably less than six.
They're 15 all NBA players.
Yeah.
But how many of those guys are actually guys you can say, I plug them on this squad, I'm winning 50?
Less than six. Yeah.
And so I think it puts teams in a tougher spot now where, you know, and it puts fans in a bad spot too, because you invest in these players, you get to see them develop and become stars, and then all of a sudden the franchise decides, I think it's time to start over and get some younger guys in here, see if we can rebuild and go in a different direction. It's going to be harder for fans to stay invested in these guys because they'll know that towards the tail end of that first rookie, you know, that first rookie extension, the clock's ticking. Either he's going to want to leave or the franchise is going to decide beforehand to let him go.
And this is one of the reasons I like the Paul George deal for Oklahoma City, because now they've presented themselves with two scenarios next summer. One, in which they hope happens, is that Russell Westbrook and Paul George stick around. They've got those two guys plus Steven Adams, who I think is going to have a really good year with Paul George in that mix.
He needs to bounce back.
Yeah, or they wind up with like $100 million in cap space going into the following summer, and they can, you know, kind of start that whole thing from scratch. Now, that's a dangerous game to play, because I don't know if Sam Presti would be around to oversee that kind of rebuild. But it makes sense. You put you have the two extremes. On one hand, you have a team that I think could be a conference finalist this year if George and Westbrook wind up playing well together. On the other hand, you have a team in a complete rebuild, which is not a bad place to be in today's NBA. Look, I mean, I got why Daryl Morey made the deal for Chris Paul. I get that. But Chris Paul also, at the end of a four-year contract extension, at 37 years old, is also going to be making $40+ million per year. There's a massive risk attached to that. It's not a bad time to be, like, I never thought I'd say this, to be the Sacramento Kings. It's not a bad time to be what Philadelphia is right now. It's not a bad time for any of that at all. I mean, you either want to be a top-tier contender or a team in a complete rebuild, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, because, you know, how much do you want to pay for mediocrity? That's basically what you're asking yourself. Do you want to pay the luxury tax to be a team that might get to the second round? You probably don't, but that's what has happened nowadays. Like a team like Washington, you know, that is going to pay the luxury tax for the first time in franchise history. You know,
They're in a tough spot.
They had to keep the three guys, but the cost of paying all three is, like, crazy now. But you've invested in these guys. You developed them. You watched them become, you know, quality, you know, stars or serviceable NBA players, and there's a price for that. So, but some owners of going to balk at that and be like, okay, I know I'm making money, but I can make a lot more with these young guys on rookie deals. The fans will get excited because they're younger players. And, you know, let the superstars team up and be at the top and win their title, and we'll be lousy for a while and maybe wind up like Philly and wind up with, you know, two number one picks, and the number three pick was pretty awesome, and just stockpile talent. Hopefully nobody goes as drastic in terms of their rebuild as Philadelphia. But
I would. I mean, honestly, there are some teams out there. Like Atlanta is an example. I mean, thank God for Atlanta's sake they didn't match that contract to Tim Hardaway Jr.
Yeah.
That would have been crazy for them, especially with you know, with what they've done over the last couple of weeks with Paul Millsap and others going out the door. If I'm Atlanta, I would do a full-scale rebuild. I mean, that team's not going anywhere. I would my next move would be try to find a place for Kent Bazemore. Like, I mean, if you're not going to win, let's get off that contract while we're at it and go in that kind of direction, the rebuild direction there. I would do that.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely incentive to go that way, because the thing about, we talk about parity and we want, you know, there to be some balance in the league. We've been this way for as long as the league has been, you know, from George Mikan. If you have that one guy, then your franchise is going to have a better shot at winning than everybody else. In the 60s, you had Bill Russell. In the 80s, you had Magic and Larry. In the 90s, you had Michael. You know, 2000s, you had Shaq and Tim Duncan. If you don't have that guy, you're not going to really be in the mix anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You might luck in, be like Detroit, sneak in, you know, when, you know, there's so much dissension with Shaq and Kobe that you can win a title. But for the most part, it's hard. If you don't have that one guy, so why not blow a couple years off, try to get that guy and let him be on your franchise and try to win that way? I mean, Cleveland, without LeBron, what are the Cavaliers over the last 15 years?
Not good.
We don't talk about them.
No. They've been tanking for LeBron, basically.
Yes, yeah.
In between LeBron, they were tanking for LeBron.
Yeah. So, I mean, and that's sort of what you have to do now in this league, because we just said there's six true franchise guys. And then there's 15 All-NBA players. Are they all going to be worth that super max? I mean, so I can't fault the team for saying, okay, let's hit reboot, because there's a lot more incentive by gambling that way than by overspending on a bunch of guys. You wind up like Brooklyn,
mm-hmm.
where you've wasted your future trying to go for that one run.
The gift that keeps on giving, too, by the way. Next year, another draft pick.
Amazing.
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 But look, you know, speaking of the team that is trending in that direction shouldn't be, the New York Knicks, who continue to make strange decision after strange decision. It was the Tim Hardaway Jr. contract, which nobody in the NBA was going to offer. Tim Hardaway probably would have gotten a four-year, $45, maybe $50 million. Deion Waiters money. Deion Waiters money. He'd get that type of contract offer. So they compound that by completely detonating the possibility of a David Griffin hiring as their general manager, reportedly because they wouldn't cede complete autonomy. And, boy, how dare a basketball executive demand autonomy over his staff or demand autonomy when it comes to basketball decisions. It's insane. I don't – every month, you write like a different crappy column about New York, because they just keep giving you crappy material. They keep making bad decision. Like, I sit there and I said this on my radio show. I'm like, I don't want to be writing negative copy on New York. I don't wake up in the morning and say, boy, I'd like to trash the Knicks.
No.
They just keep doing things that make no sense whatsoever. They hire Phil Jackson when he has no basketball executive experience, and they give him complete control. And now they won't give David Griffin, who has a championship and three straight trips to the Eastern Conference Finals. I know he has LeBron. I get that, but he's the GM of that team. And they don't give him total control? I don't understand at all. They are going, Mike, to go into next year with Steve Mills and some friend of Steve Mills in charge of basketball operations, and it's not going to go well. You know how this song ends. You know how the merry-go-round twirls.
I mean, yeah, and then, okay, so you have Phil in place who was hammering the triangle down your throat, just ramming it down your throats. Okay, so when the draft comes around, you draft a point guard who is going to supposedly fit with the triangle offense.
Yeah.
Then the next week you fire the guy who has you run the triangle offense.
And Frank Ntilikina could be a good player, but I've been watching a little bit of Dennis Smith out here. Dennis Smith looks like a good player. And just like De'Aaron Fox and Lonzo Ball are intertwined, Dennis Smith and Frank Ntilikina are going to be intertwined as well. And that kid, his question marks were maturity and the fact that he didn't really improve that last in his last few months at NC State. Nobody questioned his talent. And I think the Knicks passed on him in part because they didn't think he'd play the triangle as well as Ntilikina would.
And then they abandoned the triangle.
Yes.
Which, like, what kind of direction are you going? And then, like we mentioned, the Hardaway deal. Again, you dangle your best player, the hope for your future, put him on the trade block. And then he has to ask himself, what in the world am I doing here? You know, it's hard for, like, a rookie to pass up that first rookie contract. But you got to figure, like, if I'm Porzingis, I'm like, dang, I want to be in New York. Like, he wanted to play in New York. He wants to play in New York.
He still does.
He wants the pressure of New York. He loves being there. He loves the energy at the Garden. And there are so many guys who run from that. I mean, Melo ran to it and threw away his prime because he wanted to be a Knick. This young kid now is doing the same. He wants.
I don't have any
there.
Sympathy for Carmelo, though. He had an opportunity to go to Chicago and win. He turned it down.
He did.
He turned it down.
Well, I mean, he blew it the first time because he could have easily just signed there.
Yeah.
And they would have had that team would have been loaded.
Yeah.
If he just signed there.
Yeah.
And that. We would have had a team that really could have rivaled LeBron in the Heat.
Wanted the money, and the Knicks, the salary cap logistic, the Knicks acquiring him could have paid him more money than if he signed. He's always been – I don't blame him for this. Guy should be about the money.
Give me all the money.
Take all the money and get. But he's gone for the dollar every time.
Yes.
And it's hurt him a couple of times in terms of winning and being on successful teams. He could have walked and saved the Knicks from making that deal that gave up a whole bunch of talent. And he could have gone to Chicago and played. That was the Derrick Rose MVP Chicago team. That was young Jimmy Butler. That was young Joakim Noah. Young Taj Gibson. That was a team ready to win. He could have done that. We might be talking about the Bulls winning.
Maybe, but again, there's no guarantees.
No. Houston, too, though. He could have gone there as well.
And if he had gone there and taken less money and lost, they didn't have the money. I mean, the thing is that – now, if you're a superstar player, you basically have to decide, do I take all of my money or do I take a little less or a lot less to try to win? And it's a tough decision. A lot of guys can't afford to make that decision. You know, when LeBron made the decision to go to Miami, he took a little less, but he also had his Nike deal and all the other endorsements, so he could take that little hit. After a while, he's like, once Mickey started to cut, you know, salary so he wouldn't have to pay the tax, the repeater tax, that's when LeBron was like, okay, now it's time for me to get up out of here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that really made him say, I got to get all my money too. But if you're a superstar player, it's just really – you're in a tough spot, you know, because it's a tough decision because winning comes at a cost. Because, like, Durant took a $10 million hit. He could afford to do that. Steph Curry, you know, didn't intentionally sign that deal with the Warriors. But he was woefully underpaid for those 4 years. You know, winning two MVPs, making $14 million a year, that's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
You won't see that happen again. But he now he's getting paid what he should have been getting paid. But he had to take a hit to win. And it helped the Warriors, you know, become a potential dynasty. But, you know, it's hard. It's hard to get paid of all your money and win. No one really has the opportunity to do both.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, would you agree?
No, I do agree. I don't think you can necessarily do both right away. Although, if you, like a guy like Carmelo, put yourself in a position to win, you can, first of all, you can make more money in endorsements if you're winning. You know, endorsers go for winners. That's number one. Second, the way the guys are constructing contracts nowadays, you could opt out of a contract early, get money back. I mean, if he had gone to the Bulls instead, a three-year contract or a four-year contract with a three-year opt-out, giving himself the position, he could have made some of that money back. And look, you know, he's cashing the checks. He's making his money. That's great. But he's still, you know, when he looks back and the reasons he didn't win in his career, when he didn't win, that'll be one of them. All right, we'll take a quick break here. Shams Charania, our colleague over at The Vertical, he's going to join us here on set next.
You're listening to The Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix.
Support for The Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix comes from our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. They understand that home plays a big role in your life and family. That's why they created Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage gives you the confidence you need when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. It's simple. allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Whether you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th, with Rocket Mortgage, you get a transparent online process that gives you the confidence to make an informed decision. It's convenient. Our trusted partners allow you to share your financial information with Rocket Mortgage at the touch of a button. And in addition to getting a real mortgage approval in minutes, you can even adjust the rate and length of your loan in real time to make sure you're getting the right solution for you. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/Mannix, equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
You're listening to the Vertical Podcast with Chris Mannix.
All right, welcome back to Las Vegas, Thomas and Mack Center. We are here for the NBA Summer League, and joining Michael Lee and myself is the third member of the Vertical team, Shams Charania. What's up, Shams?
Chris, how are you?
I'm good. Just, you know, summer in Vegas, man. Who doesn't like summer in Vegas?
Hot.
Who doesn't like July? It's hot. Yes, it is. It is out here in Vegas. All right, Shams, I want to hit you on a team you've been reporting on over the summer. That's Minnesota, and which has begun this... I don't want to call it a rebuild, but adding their veterans onto the group. They began with Jimmy Butler on draft night. Over the last couple of weeks, we've seen them make some key moves. Jeff Teague is into the mix. You know, they've added some key veterans here and there. Do you look at where do you put Minnesota in the hierarchy of the Western Conference right now?
If you look at the West, you know, you have Golden State, the Spurs, Clippers. I don't know how the Clippers are going to fare in terms of the arms race. But Minnesota has the talent. You look at their starting five. They got the group that they have now with Jeff Teague, Jimmy Butler, Andrew Wiggins, either Taj or Gorgui Dieng at the four, and Kat. And then you get Jamal Crawford. Jamal Crawford has his choice wherever he wanted to sign. He could have signed in Golden State, Cleveland, San Antonio had interest. Boston had some. So there, he could have picked his team, and he chose Minnesota. I think for the franchise, it meant a lot. To get a guy like that, a respected veteran. And it kind of just goes to show you where this team is now viewed. Early in free agency, you know, we reported that Jeff Teague signing within seconds of free agency tipping off. They narrowed in on him and Kyle Lowry. And when they realized Kyle Lowry would not be attainable, they turned their attention on Jeff Teague. They looked at George Hill as well. But they really liked his durability, the way he can take the ball to the basket. I think that all appealed to Coach Tom Thibodeau. And I think if you look at the West, they've got as talented of a starting five. And now you bring in Jamal Crawford. They're looking at signing more veteran wings off the bench. You know, Rodney Stuckey's a guy that they've looked into. But guys like Jamal Crawford, vets who can really help you win playoff games, I think they're right there to me, you know. You really have to see how this plays out, but they've got as talented as a starting five as you're going to see in the West.
Here's my question about Minnesota, Mike. Did they have enough shooting to survive in the Western Conference? I like the Crawford acquisition. The 36% three-point shooter last year still can make shots, and still, as Shams pointed out, a good veteran to add to that mix. But in getting the proverbial band back together in Minnesota, didn't really add a lot of perimeter shooters there.
Yeah.
How big an issue, if any, do you think that's going to be?
It depends on how they want to play. I think Tibbs is going to find a way to make it work, because if you look at the Bulls' success when they had, you know, when they were winning, three-point shot really wasn't what they were doing. But the key for them is going to be Karl Anthony Towns. I mean, he quietly had one of the more phenomenal regular seasons last year, just statistically. He's only going to get better. And I just see him having a monster year, because he puts in the work. He's a truly special player. He's a generational talent. And I think that he's ready to take that next leap, you know, even more than like Anthony Davis. I think he can get up there. He can be in that All-NBA conversation because he has all the skills, all the tools, and he's got the fire. And now he has veteran help. You know, like they've had veterans there, but they had veterans who couldn't necessarily play.
Yeah.
Now they got Jimmy Butler who can play. They got Jeff Teague who can play. They have Taj Gibson who can play. And being surrounded by those guys is only going to make it much easier for him. I'm interested to see what Wiggins does, but I'm not worried at all about Kat. I think he's ready to climb.
Yeah, they got a lot of guys there. And, you know, there was a stretch, Shams, in like, I think it was March, like early March and into maybe early April, somewhere around then, that they look like the team that Tibbs wanted to be. Like, I thought it happened sooner. I thought with Tibbs and that group, it'd take them like 2 months to figure out to win close games. They'd start doing it, and they'd make like a Utah from a few years ago, second half of the season type of run when Utah was one of the best teams in basketball. That didn't quite happen, but this is like, I see them as a breakout team. I think the guys they added, kind of like you, again, to use Utah as an example, you know, the vets Utah added to the mix this year made, or last year, made sense. Same thing with Minnesota. The vets make sense with this team.
Yeah, you see, Mike made the point. Last year they had guys like Brandon Rush coming off the bench, Nemanja Bjelica coming off the bench. Now you're coming in with Jamal Crawford coming off the bench. You know, they've really added guys that can play, guys that can really aid Karl Anthony Towns, Andrew Wiggins. The trade that they made with the Bulls, I thought the Bulls got a good enough haul to make that worthwhile. You get three players that could end up being, you know, guys that cornerstone guys that you can build a franchise around for a few years. But anytime you can get a top 10 to 15 NBA player, you do it. They did it. And now, I mean, they're, like I said, their starting five is as lethal as any team to me in the league. And, you know, Golden State's in another league on
yeah.
their own.
Yeah. It's like everybody got relegated. It's like soccer. You're all like, here's one team up there, and everybody else is there. You're down there. And there's the...
But they've got so much firepower. And it's going to be interesting to see how Andrew Wiggins, Jimmy Butler mesh. Jimmy's going to come in, and he's, you know, he's been the guy with Chicago the past 2 years. It'll be interesting to see how him and Andrew Wiggins mesh. They both have similar styles in terms of they like to use the mid-range shot, like to get to the basket. And one of them is going to have to learn how to hit open threes when it really matters. And I think Andrew Wiggins has the potential to do so.
All right, let me ask you, Shams, about what Toronto did. And I was curious. They were one of the teams I was most interested to see what they would do because of the way the playoffs ended for them, getting broomed out by Cleveland in four games. They had a lot of money that they had to spend to keep that group together. They did it. They bring back Serge Ibaka on a three-year deal. They bring back Kyle Lowry on a three-year deal. At the same time, they've been excising some of their veterans, Damari Carroll, the latest to go in a deal with Brooklyn. What do you make of what the Raptors did this offseason?
They wanted to bring the group back together, but they wanted to give themselves long-term flexibility. And I wrote this in the C.J. Miles story we had the other day on the sign-in trade that's going to go down after the Brooklyn trade with Damari Carroll goes through. They wanted to make sure that they gave these guys deals, took care of them, and they did with Kyle Lowry, almost $100 million, Serge Ibaka, $65 million. They wanted to make sure they took care of them, but they didn't want to commit 4 years. They didn't want to commit 5 years. 3 years, we'll see what this group can do. You bring in C.J. Miles, who's an upgrade over the situation they had last year, for better or for worse. Damari Carroll wasn't able to be healthy, fully healthy during his time in Toronto.
Big disappointment there. Yeah. I mean, I thought he was a perfect fit for them when he signed with there.
Right. And so now you bring in C.J. Miles to the fold. He's durable. He can hit open threes. He can do different things on both ends of the floor. I think that they wanted to make sure they brought this group back, gave them another chance in the Eastern Conference. But they wanted to make sure that we're not hamstringing ourselves come year four, year five. We want to be free, clear, if we need to be.
They must have a lot of confidence in DeLon Wright, too, because the Corey Joseph part, like, threw me off.
DeLon Wright and Fred VanVleet. They really like Fred as well. And you know, DeLon played really well at the end of the last season. And Corey Joseph became expendable. He's got a player option next year. And so Indiana's been targeting him for weeks.
I tell you, the Carroll deal, you know, just because they had to put sweeteners in it. They had to throw in a first-round pick to get him off the roster. That was the one thing that worried me about Toronto, was would they be willing to pay deep into the luxury tax? Because, you know, keeping those guys is one thing, but then fleshing out the roster with quality guys around them. And, like, the counter I get from people out there is, you know, oh, these guys that you mentioned, Shams, like the Dellen Wrights and the VanVleets, and, of course, Norm Powell is the young star at the small forward position, you know, that gives them a chance to play even more. But to me, like, you could just keep these guys and have them compete for minutes there. I mean, if it's just money, why not keep all these guys around? That bothered me a little bit because I don't know. Look, they're the same team, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know that they got better this offseason. They kept that group together. I don't know if they improved.
I will say that they got better because the East got worse. So, like, there aren't a lot of teams in the East that are trying right now. If you're one of those teams that's trying,
yeah, it's like three.
Then you got better. I mean, just by default. And I think, honestly, that's how you kind of got to look at it, because they could have easily said, okay, we just got swept by LeBron. We have no shot to beat them. But no one else is trying here. Let's go ahead and keep this group together. You know, Kyle Lowry never really got a chance to play with Serge Ibaka. He was hurt most of the time after the trade deadline. So they never really had a chance to figure out how to play off of each other. Take a chance, maybe see how they come together. you know, see maybe this group can actually, you know, come figure out an identity. And, you know, you can fool around a bit because no one else is really going to challenge you. You know, you don't have to worry about the Bulls anymore. You don't have to worry about the Pacers anymore. You don't have to worry about, you know, a lot of these teams that decided to blow it up. Atlanta's gone out of the picture. So they're going to rack up wins off of those teams now. So they might, their record probably is going to be improved just because. And then when you get to the playoffs, who knows what's going to happen? Who knows what health is going to happen? You know, will the Cavs really want to be with each other? Will the guys be like, I'm just tired of playing with this guy. Mm-hmm. I'm just ready for it to be over. And maybe you take advantage and you sneak in. So I didn't like it because I didn't like how they ended the season. It wasn't an encouraging thing, performance at all. I said, well, this group's got to be over because this is not enough. But if the rest of the East is waving a white flag and you're going to give it a shot, what the heck? You probably won't get hurt for it.
Yeah, like Mike said, they didn't get much time to calibrate themselves with Kyle Lowry, Serge Ibaka, DeMar DeRozan. And they had issues. There were issues on the court with those guys finding chemistry together. And this summer, this training camp coming up, is going to be big for all those guys. Kyle Lowry, Serge Ibaka, DeMar DeRozan, they have to get on the same page. Or otherwise, this franchise isn't going to compete at the level that these guys are being paid.
Yeah, just be paying a lot of money to some star players. All right, let's talk about another team they'll be competing with, and that's Boston. They get Gordon Hayward, and look, the euphoria as someone that lives in Boston, the euphoria, you can hear it outside your walls, basically, of people celebrating. Now they've got Hayward, they've got Al Horford. There are people in Boston that legitimately believe they're going to compete with Cleveland this year. They're not, but they're getting closer. They're inching a little bit closer, and they're kind of the heir to that Cleveland throne once the Cavaliers, if they fall apart after next season. But I tell you what, Chums, they, in losing Avery Bradley, that gave me a little bit of a pause there. Because you knew they were going to lose Olynyk anyway for financial reasons. Plus, you know, Kelly Olynyk, as much as I like him, some nights he just vanishes on others. And I don't know if I would have paid him what Miami ultimately paid him. Boston wasn't. They were going to give him $10 million per year. That was it initially. And then after that, they'd wash their hands of it. But you lose Avery Bradley and Kelly Olynyk and some of the other guys they have to renounce. It you're still, I think, a better team. But some of the guys we're seeing here in Summer League, it means they got to play. And they got to play better for Boston to take that next step.
Boston had a big decision to make between trading Jay Crowder, Avery Bradley, or Marcus Smart. They chose Avery Bradley. He's going to be up for a contract next summer. To me, every team in the league wants Jay Crowder. Utah would have loved to have Jay Crowder in this sign-and-trade. He's on one of the team-friendliest deals in the league. He can play the 3, the 4, guard 1 through 5 in today's NBA. To me, it made sense getting rid of Avery Bradley. They love Marcus Smart. They've spent a lot of time this summer in trying to help him grow as a point guard and really assume that position potentially down the line. I think they see his future as a point guard, and they're going to do everything in their powers to make sure that he realizes potential. And that just goes to show you how much faith they have in him. To me, you get back Marcus Morris. I think that that's a steal if you're giving up a guy who's going to get maybe near the max in Avery Bradley. He's really good on both ends of the floor. And in today's NBA, Stan Van Gundy has been, you know, he's been clamoring for a guy like that for a while. Obviously, they let KCP go. They renounced his rights. He's going to probably sign elsewhere. They wanted a guy like Avery Bradley. It made 100% sense for them. And getting back Marcus Morris, who I'm told Danny Ainge has loved for years, I think it made sense for them. I agree with you. They've lost some depth. But I think Marcus Morris, Aaron Baines, who they reached agreement with on yesterday, I think that's going to help them out a lot too. Getting him, and he had other deals out there. He chose Boston, and this just goes to show, like even in the West, Minnesota, a veteran free agent choosing Minnesota over other situations. People are seeing Boston as that as a team. Like, listen, if I'm going to go on a 1-year deal, if I'm going to go in a situation where I have to prove myself again, I'm going to a team where I can get exposure. I can get a chance to compete against some of the best teams in the league.
I question Shams if they're now done with the Jay Crowder talks. I felt like this was an opportunity for them to pull back a little bit because we knew they had to make a deal. They had to move somebody to clear the cap space to sign Hayward. And Bradley turned out to be the easiest to move because everybody wants Avery Bradley. I mean, you can inject Avery Bradley in his game into any team in the league and he'd find a way to fit in. Jay Crowder, you mentioned the contract and the player that he is. I don't know that they're done exploring that kind of deal. I think this gives them some of the latitude to pull back a little bit. And if somebody comes in with an offer with a big man, and I think they're looking for that big man that can Because, you know, Al Horford will lose his mind if he has to play five all season long. He will lose it. I think this gives them a chance to kind of pull back a little bit and wait for teams to come to them and fight for Jay Crowder as opposed to maybe giving him away.
I think you nailed it. I think that they're willing to move off of Jay. I think that that's, you know, I don't think that they're unwilling to listen to offers. They listened to it on draft night. There were a lot of discussions being had during draft week about potentially moving Jay Crowder. I don't think it ever got close. But, you know, it's like Danny Ainge has discussion on all these guys, though. You know, they're all a talking point. like every team in the league, like every player in the league. They discuss Jay, but I think they want, if they were going to get rid of a guy like Jay, they'd want multiple picks. They want the house. They want a lot of different players because he's one of the most valuable players in the league. You look at his contract, you look at his game, he's one of the most valuable players in the league to me. It's hard to replace a Jay Crowder, not just on your salary books, but on the floor and in the locker room. They're not just going to give a guy like that away. Obviously, they got rid of Avery Bradley. They got back Marcus Morris. It'll take a much greater haul to get Jay Crowder off your hands.
Yeah, Chom's hit it, Mike. I mean, this guy, you know, Hayward is a better player, especially for that team because of what they do. But Jay Crowder was a starting small forward on 53-win Celtic team. And he had his moments defensively. He's a high-level defensive player. Streaky with the jump shot, but he's got pretty good value out there.
Yeah, he's got that dog in him, too. That's what you need on that team. And I think if you look at the mentality of that group, they all kind of embody, like, you know, this Isaiah Thomas, where they shouldn't be there. They should not be winning. They should not be this good. But they have this sort of internal arrogance that comes out on the court where – you look at that roster and it doesn't blow you away, but here they are, the best record in the East last year. But the one question that I have about the Gordon Hayward signing and the euphoria that came with it, mm-hmm. is that as much as that makes them better, and I don't doubt that it makes them better, but does it make them a championship team? And when you make these kind of moves and you break up the chemistry, because I'm with you on Avery Bradley, I think that it wasn't just his, you know, what he gives you on the defensive end. It's what he meant to that team just spiritually to me last year. I thought that when Isaiah Thomas had the incident with his sister passing, I thought he stepped up in a major way to, one, help Isaiah get through it, and, two, he elevated his game to where, like, okay, we're not going to lose to the Bulls, you know? Like, we're going to win this thing. And I thought he was there. He had great games against the Wizards as well. Like, he was the difference maker. And when you lose a piece like that, you know, I think that sometimes, you know, that can set you back. And with the talent they have on that squad, is it enough? Because we talked about it earlier, there may be five or six legit franchise guys that can alter your franchise. I mean, make you a legit championship contender. Do they have any of those guys? Do you see any of these guys on the Celtics roster being a finals MVP? You know, no matter who you pick as their best player, is that the player that any franchise would say, I want him to be the best player of my franchise to win a championship? And I think that's the dilemma they're in, and where they're going to need their young guys, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, to really be special players, probably faster than they would expect it, for them to really take that next leap, because they're their top three picks. They're their normal franchise foundational pieces that you can build around. And they're in unique situations because they're learning behind, you know, other established vets. But to truly be a special franchise, you need a special player. I don't know if they have that special player.
Well, fellas, enjoy the summer league action. I'm sure it's exactly why we're all out here to see mid-level. Maybe that's why Shams out here. Shams loves the mid-level draft pick. We love these young guys. Thanks for doing the podcast, fellas. I appreciate it.
Chris, appreciate
Thank
it.
You.
Thank you.
That's it for this week's episode. My thanks to Michael Lee and Shams Charania for joining the show. As always, you can download Archive Podcast on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, really anywhere you can download podcasts. While you're there, post a comment, leave a rating. You know I appreciate it. And I'll see you next week.
This has been a digital media production. Find your voice.